track 12. For our feature item this week, we have one of our occasional interviews. Earlier this week, I ventured to Newton Abbot Racecourse, where I had the pleasure of chatting to John Baker, the new chief executive. The interview lasts for about 20 minutes. Well, good morning. Thank you so much for your time. I know you must be a very busy man. But can we find out a bit about what your job is? You're the chief executive of Newton Abbot Racecourse. And I admit, until very recently, I hadn't realised that the racecourse had a chief executive. So what are your key responsibilities?
It's really a lot about the strategy and direction of the racecourse. But obviously, oversee all the operational elements to putting on racing and to running the racecourse. Obviously, look at the development of the team, oversee the team, make sure the team are delivering on their tasks and their objectives.
You talk about the team. What does the team comprise?
Yeah, so we have a ground staff team here, four people who basically make sure the grass is ready for horses to race on and to make sure the grounds all around the racecourse are looking smart and presentable. And we have an accounts team, obviously, importantly, look after the finances. And then we have a sales and marketing element who are in the office every day. And we also have a large casual team who come in and help us on race days or events specifically. So that'll be catering staff, gate staff, security staff. So on a race day, you can go from having a team of 20 up to a team of 170, 180
people. Wow, I hadn't realised that.
Yes, so yeah. A lot of people to put on a race day. We traditionally get anything from 2,000 people to 7,500 people on a race day here, 7,500 people on Easter Saturday. So we need to ensure that we're looking after those people and people come here.
Talking of race days, how many do you have in a year?
Yeah, so we only have 18. We race from between April and October. We're what known as a summer racing jumps track. So there's not many jumps tracks in the country who are devoted to just racing through the summer. There's only sort of like half a dozen to eight of those sorts of tracks. So we're quite unique in many ways. But yeah, 18 race days, as I say. Easter Saturday is our biggest one. We have a couple of other Saturdays through the year. Popular ones like Ladies' Evening, which is an evening meeting in June. And again, part of my role is to try and develop those racing fixtures so they're more attractive to people and more people come and use Newton Abbot as a venue. Yeah.
So who determines how many race days there are during the year?
So we're only part of a small part in a bigger cog of British racing.
Absolutely.
So there's a body called the British Horse Racing Authority. And there's also another authority called the Levy Board. Levy Board does the finances for racing, collects all the money in from the bookmakers. And the BHA basically run the fixture list. So you are predetermined as to the sorts of fixtures that you will have in any given year. There is some flexibility to move those around the calendar or take on new fixtures, but it depends again what other racecourses are doing, what other racecourses want to do their fixtures. So it's quite a complicated process, quite a bit of a jigsaw, but we have to fit into that jigsaw so that British racing is putting on the best product for people watching at home. Yeah.
You're not independent enough to be able to say we are going to have a race day on this day.
Yes, so we can't say we're in our race course, we have 18 fixes in that framework, but we're going to put another 10 on ourselves. No, we can't do that.
Right, okay.
And I think that's the correct thing. I think that's the right thing for British racing as a whole.
I'm not into racing, as I've already said to you.
Yeah.
But I think we've all heard of the Jockey Club. Where does that fit into the picture?
So I've just mentioned the British Horse Racing Authority. The Jockey Club used to do what the BHA do now. So they used to run the rules of racing. They don't do that anymore. The Jockey Club does still exist. And it runs things like various studs and various race courses across the country. They have 15 race courses across the UK. Mm. So they're a very important group within racing because they run tracks such as Aintree with the Grand National, Epsom, the Derby, Newmarket with the Guineas. So they have some of the biggest races, the Cheltenham Festival, of course, which is just upcoming. So they hold a lot of key fixtures in the fixture list, and their whole ethos is that everything goes back into racing. So the Jockey Club, whilst they don't actually run racing anymore, they still play a very important part.
Can you tell me a bit about the history of this course? Because it's not owned by the Jockey Club.
No. We're fortunate. We have about 50 shareholders who want this racecourse to remain independent, and they want racing at Newton Abbot to be here for many, many years to come as an independent racecourse. As I say, running its 18 racing fixtures a year. The course has had its first race here back in 1866. So it's just had its, well, just had, a few years ago, its 150th anniversary. So there's a lot of history here, a lot of racing history that's gone on here. and we're very proud of that. And we probably don't make enough of it as a track. You know, we're probably quite reserved about the history that's taken place here. But yeah, it's obviously steeped in local history.
Yeah, so it's a private company.
Yes, yes, it is. And as I say, we're very proud to be independent, and we're in a fortunate position that the racecourse has been well managed. We're in a very good position. It makes good money through the year through its racing operations and, of course, some non-race day events that we have, and that's part of the business we very much want to grow.
Yeah, I've always wondered about the financing of racecourses, because you see, you go past a racecourse, your next race day about 3 months away.
Yes.
You clearly can't survive just on your race days alone.
I would never be comfortable to try and survive on race days alone. We saw here last year, of our 18 fixtures, 6 were abandoned because of the weather. Obviously, it gets very wet in Devon, something I didn't know before. I knew about. So that had a massive impact on us. That cost us effectively £500,000. So we cannot just rely on racing, otherwise things like that can happen and that can put you in a very difficult position. Yeah. So no, we have to exist as a business outside of racing, hence we put a lot of events on, such as flea markets, antiques fairs. So we do quite a lot outside of racing as well. As I say, there's a lot more we'd like to be doing.
Without going into detail, in round figures, what sorts of totals are we talking about for running the course?
Our fixed expenditure before we do anything, so obviously in terms of your staff and utilities, etc., would cost us in the region of £1.3 million a year.
Right.
That's before we obviously start in terms of running racing meetings and non-race day events. We're fortunate here to make a reasonable amount of profit from our race days. We would make in a normal year something between £400,000 and £500,000. Obviously last year that was completely wiped out. From a non-race day perspective, we will probably make a profit of about £300,000 over the course of the year.
I know that you've worked in the racing world for most of your working life.
Yes.
How did you get into it in the first place?
It's a bit of a long story, this one, really. My granddad was my hero growing up, and when I was 5 years old, he sat me down in front of the TV, gave me 10 pence and said, which horse do you want to back in this race? It was the Grand National. It was the year Red Rum won his first Grand National, which is when he caught a great horse called Crisp. And he caught him right on the line, sort of a big dramatic finish. But the whole spectacle and the noise and the colour, the fences, the drama of the race itself just captivated me. And my granddad then subsequently bought me a book which detailed all the heights of the fences, the history of the race, all that. So from that age on, I was just fascinated by racing. As I went through my education, I wanted to be a sports journalist, so I went to university, got an English degree, wasn't successful, so I was about to go into accountancy, and I was lucky enough at the last minute to get a job in racing, just lucky enough to get a job with Weatherby's, and that was back in 1990, and then really, just went from there.
And you worked your way up to what must be one of the top jobs in the racing world, Aintree?
Yeah, I was lucky enough from 1973, being captivated by the race, to actually get the opportunity to run the race in my career was incredible. Massive pressure, but loved every second of it. And I'd like to think that I played my part in the history. You know, you're just a custodian, you're just passing through and just trying to make sure every decision you make ensures that that race is there for hundreds of years to come. Yeah, it was a great honour to do it.
How long were you at Aintree?
So I did 7 years. Uh-huh. When I went there, we'd had 2 horse fatalities in the race for the prior 2 years. So I took the, some say, bold decision to change the nature of the fences, shorten the race, move the start. So a number of initiatives to try and help make the race be as safe as it possibly could at the time. You can never make a horse race totally safe, unfortunately. Felt I played my part in making a difference. The first year I was there, we had no horse fatalities, which was really important. Very proud of my time there. But huge pressure given, I think it's the only race in British racing that isn't just about sport. It transcends the sport itself and it gets off the sporting pages. Unfortunately, as I say, before I went there, just prior, we were on the front page of the Sunday papers for the very wrong reasons.
I mean, I'm glad you've raised this, because I think it had to come up in conversation that there are serious concerns these days about Aintree in particular, because it's a very big race in every sense. And what is being done to address the natural concerns?
If we're talking about Aintree, you know, there's an ongoing programme to try and evolve the race and the course. Last year, they reduced the number of runners from 40 to 34. During my time, we put in a complete sprinkler system so you can water to make the ground as soft as you need it to be. So that's from an Aintree perspective, and I'm sure they'll continue to evolve that race for the right reasons. I think, you know, I was always conscious that the reason it is a great race because there is some thrilling element to it, that, you know, people want to see drama. You need to keep the element of those big green fences, but you also need to be making it as safe as you possibly can. I think racing is very focused. We now have a horse welfare board that looks at various projects to try and improve horse welfare, whether that be at race courses, whether that be at training establishments. There's also a real focus now on what happens to the horse after it's finished its racing career. I think as a sport, we are holding our hands up and saying, look, you know, we do need to make improvements. There's no doubt about that. And I think the sport will continue to look for improvements. But as I say, you can never totally remove the risk that when a horse goes onto a racetrack and races, that it can unfortunately hurt itself.
Do you think Aintree has got a long-term future?
I obviously am very passionate about the race, and it's been around for a long time. And there's some great racing stories. There's some great sporting dramas. You know, Old Anetian Bob Champion, Red Rum winning 3 Grand Nationals, Rachel Blackmore being the first female jockey to win the race. You know, there's a whole history, massive history. And I think it's important in sort of the UK sporting culture that the Grand National has a place. So I would like to say yes, hand on heart. I really don't know. I'd like to think, yeah, it'll be here for hundreds of years to come. I really don't know.
That's interesting. You must have had some highlights while you were at Aintree. Can you just tell us one or two?
I think the one that always sticks in my mind, and I've talked about those horse fatalities the 2 years prior to me being my first Grand National there, and the changes I made while I was there. That first Grand National, there were 40 horses lined up, and, you know, the Grand National is known for traditionally having fallers in that early part of the race, and Beecher's Brook is a very famous, iconic fence that's very difficult for horses to jump. Traditionally, that first year, 40 horses jumped the first 6 fences, and the 6th fence being Beecher's Brook. And when the commentator said, and all the horses have cleared Beecher's Brook, massive cheer from the crowd. And that was just spine tingling, really, because it sort of justified, because obviously people were behind what was trying to do, and people did recognise that that was important to the race and important to everything. People had obviously realised and understood changes had been made. And when the commentator said that, and the response from the crowd was like that, it was just, yeah, that was an incredible, incredible moment. There were some difficult times. Some low points would be, obviously, we did have horse casualties as I went through the years there. That is always difficult. You have to take the difficult questions. I met some great people along the way. The Princess Royal, who is an absolutely incredible human being. The time she gives to people is just phenomenal. The interest she shows in people, I just think she is an absolute credit to this country. So getting to meet her as well was an incredible highlight for me.
Quite a horsewoman too.
Yeah, absolutely. She knows everything. She understands it. I just think the human being that she is, just in terms of connection with people and just giving time for people, is just, yeah, it's just remarkable.
You left Aintree in 2020 to become CEO of Whitehaven Harbour Authority, was it?
Yes, Whitehaven Harbour Commissioners, yeah.
Seems like a bit of a right-angle turn.
Yes, I think the reason I left Aintree, I'd had 7 years there. I've talked about all the pressure, the enjoyment. I think you also come to a point running a venue that you do have a point where you've done all you can and you've sort of changed a lot of things, and you get to a point where you're thinking, well, you know, what can I do that's different now? How can you go? How can you reinvent it? And I'd also reached 30 years in racing. And I thought, 30 years, that's a long old time. So I decided to just take a break. The plan was to go travelling at the time, but then about a month after, COVID came. So that scuppered those plans. So then I thought, rather than going back to racing, I thought, well, what can I do that's something completely different? How can I test my skills, my enthusiasm in a completely different arena? Unfortunately, Whitehaven came up. I had connections to Whitehaven. Again, I talked about my granddad earlier being my hero. Our holiday every year was 3 days in the Lake District. He was born just up the road from Whitehaven. He was a Cumberland wrestler, so there's the whole lot of connections to Cumbria for me personally. So to go back there and have the opportunity to work for them, that was running a harbour, a marina. And we also had a tourist attraction called the Rum Story up there, running 5 car parks. So it wasn't just a harbour, there was an awful lot to it. And Whitehaven's a town that has a huge potential, but it is in a deprived area, so there's a lot of work needed to be done there. And I got there to the two lighthouses around the harbour were in dilapidated conditions. Being able to go out and get the funding to enable those to be completely refurbished again was a very proud moment and made a real difference to that community.
But you left after, 3 years or so?
Had 3 years there. I was actually approached by Windermere Marina Village, which again is similarly a marina on Windermere, again in the Lake District, with a sort of holiday village around the marina. So that was another different challenge that I thought, again, well, look, it's something different again. But they were obviously keen to work with me. Again, I thought I'd done a lot for Whitehaven. I was very proud of that. That I left them in a very good position. I'm still in touch with the team and the board there now. But yeah, I went to Windermere Marina Village. I think it's just around that time I started to miss racing. I hadn't missed racing as such. I still obviously had an interest in the sport, but I didn't have an aching desire to get back into it. But slowly but surely, it did start to come back. And then the opportunity at Newton Abbot came up, and I just think this race course has an awful lot of potential. It's got an awful lot of greatness already about it. When you come racing here, there's a great atmosphere. I think there's a lot of passion for it. But I also think, you know, there's a lot more that can be done with it. I think there's a lot more we can do in the community. There's a lot more we can do to reach out into the community and get the community to embrace it and come and use it. It's theirs. So I think there's work we can do with that. I think there's certainly scope to do a lot more with commercial partnerships. Fortunate to be looking out over the race course here. You know, there's lots of land which we can use better. And I'm loving every second of it. The people here are incredible. I've only been a short time, obviously, but the people of Devon have been incredible. I've been in other parts of the country through my career, and people of Devon are really friendly and open and approachable and helpful. And so I'm really, really, really enjoying it.
Good. Well, I think that probably deals with what is your vision for Newton Abbot Racecourse.
I think we can be the best racecourse in the UK, pound for pound. Now, I know people will go, well, what about Ascot? What about York? What about Aintree?
Yeah.
I get that. I'm just talking about customer experience, how we can be commercially successful, what we can do in the community. There's lots of different ways in which we can be effectively the best racecourse in the country by delivering on everything that we want to do.
I was going to ask you about, you'd mentioned communities, and I think in the report I saw in the press a few weeks ago when you arrived, you talked about links with the local community.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, so when I was at Aintree, I introduced the first ever programme of its type, which was a community programme, which again is worked because at Aintree it's known as the People's Race Course, the People's Race. We then weren't connecting with that community. Yes, it was there, but we were sort of very inward looking. Whereas I think our communities around the race course should embrace them and should bring them in and get them to use the place. And the power of sport, I think, and the power of the horse is, you know, I've seen some incredible things with horses. You know, we did a programme up at Aintree with dementia sufferers. When you bring a racehorse out to them, it's incredible what it does. I've taken horses into schools as part of those programmes, and again, the difference it can make to people in the cities who've never come across a horse. Again, it's just incredible when they get close up to it. So we have a great deal that we can do, I feel, and a great difference we can make in the community. That's what I was talking about, but there's also some simple things. You know, obviously we start work with Rotary and all those sorts of things and commercial partners, but I think we're a very important venue for Devon. And I don't just talk about Newton Abbot when I say that, I talk about Devon as a whole. This isn't just about being the best race course just for vanity purposes. This is about wanting everyone to be proud of this venue and everyone to be proud to say that they live near Newton Abbot and they come to Newton Abbot and they visit Newton Abbot. So, community is hugely, hugely important to me.
One thing we haven't covered here, just for a matter of factual background, is this a flat racing course or a jumps?
So, yes, we are a jumps course, and we are unusual being a jumps course that only races in the summer. There's probably only half a dozen, six, seven, eight of us who do that. And that poses its own challenges. I talked about it raining more than I thought it would in Devon. Because we are summer jumps, we also do see some good weather, but that means some dry weather. So we do have to water because, again, we want safe ground here when horses are racing through the summer. So we will water the track. But if you then get a massive downpour, which you can get, and I think the climate's changing, rainfall now comes a lot heavier than it used to. So that can create challenges. As I say, we lost six race meetings out of 18 because of that rain last year.
And, of course, you've got the river running alongside the course as well.
We've got the river running alongside it. You know, we are on a floodplain, so we have to work close with the Environment Agency. So there are many, many challenges through being a summer jumps track. And obviously it gives us the chance to get local community involved, but all, you know, there are a lot of holiday makers who come through and pass through here, so it's an opportunity to get more and more people to come and use us as well. So it's a real challenge. We race first race in just over 6 weeks' time. So we do need a bit of luck.
A bit of dry weather.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
I have walked around the course on one occasion for a charity event.
Yeah.
And it's a delightful course to walk around, I have to say. It's absolute delight sitting here in your boardroom, looking out over the course. It's a privilege. John, thank you so much for your time this morning.
No problem.
You've got an awful lot to do, I know. So I very much appreciate your sparing the time to talk to us.
Thanks for listening. Thank you very much.
I hope you found that interesting. I thought the way he hedged his bets on the future of the Grand National was particularly interesting.